You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 13th of September. An entire show on rebounding. Oh, wow. This is going to be a winner. Locke's going to geek out on rebounding on a Friday. I'm going to fall asleep with my forehead hitting my desk. It's all coming up next on Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. Give you insight, expertise, question mark, really, really geeky numbers, that's true, and generally making your life better as a Jazz fan. I don't know if I'm going to do any of those things today. We're going to do an entire show on rebounding because that's what I've spent a huge amount of my summer trying to understand and look at. Not a huge amount, but a good deal. And so I have that for you. And actually, I'll try to make it interesting. And if you're a basketball junkie, you might find it interesting. World Cup is going terribly today for the Jazz players. Spain and Australia played a semifinal double overtime World Cup classic that will be remembered by, I don't know. And Ricky Rubio went 6 of 19 from the field, but he had 23 points, 7 rebounds, 12 assists, 4 steals, and led Spain to a double overtime 95-88 win. Marc Gasol had 33. Joe Ingles played 44 minutes. Ah! And went 1 of 9 from the field, 0 of 6 from 3. Had 10 rebounds, 7 assists, and he did at a negative 15. I don't know if he's tired, but we can give him a rest after 44 minutes. And right now, Argentina, who is going to turn out to be the surprise of the tournament, is leading France late in the fourth quarter. So I'll keep you updated on that. But Argentina's up 12 with 8:49 left. And it looks as though France just has had a complete letdown after beating the United States. And Rudy Gobert amongst them. Rudy Gobert is 0-for-2 shooting in the entire game today. Has 5 points, 7 rebounds, and is minus 10 on the floor in his time on the floor. So we'll keep an eye on it, but those are going badly. All right, let me talk. I mean, I tell you what, like pickup lines at a bar, way to really let's talk rebounding. All right, here's the first. And this all plays into kind of three parts. So I'm looking at offensive rebounding. Then we're going to look at rebound location. And then we're going to look at how it impacts the game and whether you can do anything out of transition out of it. So there, teams have stopped offensive rebounding in the NBA. And one of the reasons why I think they've stopped is because everyone's stretched out, so there's less players near the rim. The other reason that people have stopped offensive rebounding is because Greg Popovich and Doc Rivers stopped offensive rebounding and went and got back, and everyone followed the veteran coaches and thought to themselves, well, if they're not offensive rebounding, we probably shouldn't also. However, if you're not offensive rebounding, it would imply that you're bypassing the offensive rebound because you are a better defensive team by cutting off transition, right? That would be the implication. So there's first thing is, the 6 best offensive rebounding teams last year, of the 6 best, 5 of the 6 were in the top half of the league defensively. Only the Minnesota Timberwolves were 24th. They didn't get back at all in transition defense. That's not Carl Anthony Towns. That's probably the biggest single criticism that you can give him. So the 6 best offensive rebounding teams last year, Denver was 11th. Defensively, Portland was 13th, Oklahoma City was 3rd, Miami was 6th, Minnesota was 24th, and Detroit was 12th. So not only are they getting the advantage of an offensive rebounder to a night that nobody else is getting, but they're actually good defensively. The 6 worst offensive rebounding teams were San Antonio, Chicago, Memphis, Phoenix, Milwaukee, and Washington. By the way, I like to use 6 because it's 1/5, so it's 20%. San Antonio ranked 20th off defensively, Chicago 25th, Memphis 10th, Phoenix 29th, Milwaukee 2nd, and Washington 26th. So whereas 5 of the 6 best offensive rebounding teams were in the top half defensively, there were actually only 2 of the 6 worst teams. So there's absolutely no correlation between no offensive rebounding and good defense, and there's absolutely no correlation between high offensive rebounding and bad defense. So maybe that's flawed. That's too simple. So I can look at, through unpredictable, what a defense ranks after a missed shot. This would imply you're going for the offensive rebound, you don't get it, the team comes the other way, you're more susceptible to fast break, you should be less good. Denver is the 15th best defense after a missed shot. Portland is the 7th. Oklahoma City is the 10th. Miami is the 12th. Minnesota is 29th. And Detroit is 20th. So Andre Drummond, who is a massive man and an incredible offensive rebounder, does not change ends of the floor well. Okay, that's because he's Andre Drummond. That has nothing to do with offensive rebounding. He's just a massive man. Minnesota is just that they're lazy and the worst transition defensive team I've seen in years. It was evident last year. We'll see if they change that. And the other teams, Miami, Oklahoma City, Portland, and Denver, all top 4 offensive rebounding teams and all top half of the league in defense after a missed shot. Right? Like, so pretty amazing. So really, I find absolutely no correlation. So I dug the next level. Part of this is because there's so little variation in any offensive rebounding. Number 2 in the league is 11.89 offensive rebounds, and last in the league was 8.8. So the difference between the number 2 offensive rebounding team and the last team in the league is 3 offensive rebounds. So it's very little. And the 6th team in the league was 11.4, and the 24th team was 9.6. So the difference between 6th and 24th, the middle pack, is actually 2 offensive rebounds. So the difference between an offensive rebounding team and a non-offensive rebounding team is really not that different. That's part of it. But what's interesting here is the increased value, the value of an offensive rebound is actually increased more than it's ever been before because offensive possessions are worth more. Now, what I could not find was any data that showed me whether or not points after offensive rebounds were any different last year than they were in the past with a shortened shot clock. Last year, we switched, so the shot clock goes to 14 after an offensive rebound, and that would be the next data point, and honestly, I couldn't find it. But offensive possessions are worth more than they've ever been. The offense is up in the league. And not only the offense, but the pace. So what's interesting about the decrease in offensive rebounding, which is just a remarkable decrease, is that the extra offensive possession is actually more valuable than it's ever been. Here's the decrease. In 2-year increments starting in 2012-13. So 2012-13, the league leader in offensive rebounding was 31%. 2 years later, it went to 29.1%. 2 years later, it went to 28%. And last year, it went to 26.5%. So 12-13, it dropped 2 percentage points in 2 years. In 14-15, it dropped 1 percentage point in 2 years. And last year, in the last 2 years, it's dropped 2.5 percentage points. So the amount of offensive rebounding is done. Even the league average, let's go to league average. 12-13, 26.7 or 27% if we round up, dropped 2 percentage points to 14-15 to 25. Rounding up, it went to 23.6 or 24 in 16-17. Last year went to 22.7. So the league average offensive rebounding in a span of 6 seasons has gone from 26.7 to 22.7, so down 4 percentage points, and the best in the league has gone down about the same amount. Maybe a little more, 4.5. So there, Offensive rebounding is way down, which leads me to believe that offensive rebounding actually has a little more value than it's ever had before. But how you offensive rebound out of a stretch floor is not entirely clear to me. Okay, so that's the first analysis piece here is that actually offensive rebounding is more valuable than it's been before, and there is no correlation right now between making the effort for the offensive rebound and having a less good defense. Does that make sense? Today's show is brought to you in part by Murdoch Hyundai. There's a lot of great, great things going on at Murdoch Hyundai. The Palisade is the biggest of them. It's the biggest car they have as well, and it's on fire. It's the new 8-seater. It's absolutely rolling right now. Linden is the fastest-selling Palisade dealership around. Hyundai, the brand as well, is just a stunner. I think I've told this story a lot, but we have some new listener. So I sat down with the Murdochs about 2 years ago, maybe a little more, and didn't know Hyundai. I mean, even was probably trying to make sure I pronounced it correctly before I went into the meeting. And they started to tell me about it. You know, you're listening to them and the car dealers, and you're like, okay, yeah, got it. And then I started to drive the Hyundai, was kind of blown away about how nice it is. Then I started to get all the features. Then it got to be time where we had a new driver in the car, in the house, excuse me, my 16-year-old son. And so we suddenly were like, all right, well, what are we going to do? We were always going to give him the hand-me-down car, but then we drove with him and realized that 16-year-old drivers are terrible. And so it was like, all right, what car can we get for the best value with the most safety features imaginable? And that's what we did. We got the Murdoch. We went to Murdoch. Jason helped us out, and we got the Santa Fe. At the time, it was the 8-seater. It's now the Palisade. All the bells and whistles on it. For safety features, those are now all standard. That's the signature of Hyundai, is the how nice it is and how many features you get for your dollar. So if you're shopping for a car right now, stop by Murdoch Hyundai in Linden, in Logan, or at 4646 South State Street in Murray. Want to look at shot rebound shot location now. Oh my gosh, this is so exciting. Just work with me. It's September. There's nothing to talk about. The players are in town. I got to sit down with some of them for production. They're perfectly nice. Justin Wright Foreman is a dynamite nice kid. So there. Hey, by the way, if you're thinking about going to a ball game or something, the Vivid Seats app can help you out with your favorite live event. Enter the promo code KICKOFF at checkout to receive a discount up to $100 at Vivid Seats. All right. So now let me get into location. My theory here, watching the NBA, is that when I watch the NBA, and I did this, I've done this a decent amount recently, and I hit pause when a shot goes up. Okay, so I'll hit pause when a shot goes up. And what I find when that shot goes up is a lot of guys sitting in places that are totally irrelevant. And so I think there's a money ball aspect in some way to this. Now, what exactly, I'm not probably smart enough to figure out, but I'm going to give you the data and you can try to consider it. So first thing, on all rebounds in each area, 85% of all rebounds come down in the paint. 85%. 0.6%, excuse me, 1.3% of all rebounds happen outside the three-point line. So if you're standing outside the three-point line when a shot goes up, you're totally useless. So you should either sprint into the paint, which is at 85%, or you should release. In the mid-range, about 6.3% of all rebounds happen on either side of the paint in the mid-range. Either side, left or right. And 2% happen in the area from the free throw line to the three-point range. That's it. So 6.4, right in the middle. Of all, if you're standing in the mid-range on either side of the paint and a shot goes up, there's only a 6.4, no matter where the shot's from, there's only a 6.4% chance that you're getting a rebound if you're standing in that paint area. I was watching the Memphis Grizzlies-Utah Jazz game the other day looking at this, and Avery Bradley is the king of this. Avery Bradley, like, stands there. He's never hit the rebound. Then by the time the rebound is taken, he kind of ends up in the paint near the ball, and it looks good. Looks good for a minute. Look, Avery Bradley's around. Point guards are the master of this. They stand there, and then they run to the ball to make sure they get it. Like, is that a value? So that's the first question. Interesting, I didn't know this until I talked to some coaches. Lots of teams coach, this might be my basketball ignorance, if you're on that wing, if you're in the wing area, you actually sprint to the elbow for the rebound. That you go to the elbow for the rebound. Because the rebound actually, if you take the restricted area, more rebounds happen outside of the restricted area than in the restricted area. So now let's look at a few specifics. Let's take all mid-range shots. Hey there, are you still awake? We're doing rebounding for a whole show today. Let's do mid-range shots. Of all misses in mid-range shots, only 6% of mid-range shots that are taken, this could be, so this includes makes, only 6% of mid-range shots are rebounded outside the paint. 6%. Now, the number goes up if it's misses. But when a guy takes a mid-range shot, if you're standing in the mid-range area, you only have a 6% chance that you're going to get that rebound. Because some 40% of those shots are going in. What's interesting to me about this from a basketball standpoint is that the floor is really flattened at this point. When somebody takes a mid-range shot, usually almost all 10 players are in the paint. Maybe not. Maybe 8 of the 10. The floor is flattened. There's nothing available for you to get your shot off. You've come off the pick. The big guy's rolled. Guys are crashing. The floor is flattened out. And yet the rebound is going to happen if it's on a miss. Now we're into misses. 39% right around the rim, and 49% of that time a little higher out by the free throw line or above the restricted area between the free throw line. Okay, 49 and 39 comes out to 86%. So even on misses, there's only a 14% chance of any of those spots. And if you start to look at where you are, there's a 2% chance of those misses coming all the way out to one of either of the angles. Inside the three-point line on either side, and a 2% chance above the free throw line. 2%! Seems to me, amateur talk show host looking at a bunch, play-by-play announcer looking at a bunch of numbers, there's something to be said here. We release out all the time on three-point shooters, right? Three-point shooter shoots, you run at them, and you go. Like, that's pretty common. We don't do that on a mid-range jump shot because in theory, probably there's nobody that close. But let's say it's a pick and roll. The mid-range, the guy takes a mid-range shot. You're trailing him. You should, look at these numbers. I think you should just turn around and sprint the other way for a fast break. Now, trying to get your guys to do that and sprint is actually hard. That doesn't actually happen a lot in this league. That's the interesting little note there. You go watch a game and hit pause at the free where they are when the shot goes up and then see what happens. There aren't a lot of guys breaking into a dead sprint at that moment in time. It's hard. It's really hard. And the game's tiring. But so if you look at all those mid-range shots, and that's only, 16 shots per game per team, and you're making about 6 of them, probably. There's about 10 of these rebounds a night. Do you risk, so if there's 10 of them a night and like weak side mid-range cut, the ball comes to you about 2.2% of the time on misses. So it would take 5 games or take 2.5 games before you'd miss one. In those 2.5 games, if you release, do you get an extra fast break? Do you get an extra fast break by doing something where the mid-range shot is actually a signal to you, we're getting out. We're going to take advantage of the fact that you don't have two guys back anymore because one of your guards is in and taking a mid-range, and boom, we're going to get out. I don't know. Three-point shooting gets even more interesting. Three-point shooting, and this will I'll wrap all of this together here at some point. Three-point shooting, we're actually doing, this one I'm actually pretty certain of, looking at the data, I do think we're doing the opposite of what we should be doing on three-point shooting. What? I'll explain this. Now, couple everything I'm talking about here with the offensive rebounding, and you can really start to spin your head a little bit about what is the right thing to do. But as long as teams are not offensive rebounding, can you be more aggressive with your leakout? And what we talked about the other day on the program, because this has been, you know, a week of stirring talk podcast for you with this insightful smorgasbord of numbers, is if you can get out a little faster and get out of 0-4 in the shot clock, it would make a dramatic difference for the Utah Jazz. All right, so I'll share with you what three-point shooting, how I think that teams should change the way they release on three-point shooting shots in a second. Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. And this week, my listeners get any premium Indochino suit for just $369, Indochino.com. I might have to do this as well. I looked at my suits the other day. And I might not fit them the way I did a year ago. Oops. Indochino.com, promo code LOCKEDON at checkout. I told you about the guys over at Stealth Media earlier this week, Eric and the crew. They're a pretty neat company. DirecTV and AT&T together. So you can go combine your services. If you're looking to make the switch, Stealth Media will do it for you. 385-399-4186. Here's some cool things. Maybe this is my ignorance, but when I think of DirecTV, I'll be pretty honest. I think about DirecTV on my television. But you got to think about DirecTV on the go. And even moreover, if you have DirecTV and AT&T, then when you're streaming your DirecTV, it does not count as data. Did not know that at all. See the things I learned by talking to interesting people? Plus, you get NFL Sunday Ticket for free for the year on DirecTV. And DirecTV has a 72-hour rewind. If you forgot to DVR something, you can go back for 72 hours and go get it and watch it. Best quality HD in the network. Combine your AT&T and your DirecTV and get the best coverage. Save money. Take it on the go like we're talking about. And Eric Ellis, Stealth Media, is going to give you a $100 gift card, Visa gift card, if you tell him that you are with Locked On. 385-399-4186. That's 385-399-4186. They also do some cool things. They specialize in large man cave TVs, 65, 75, 82, 4K, all those kind of things, and they do it for you cheaper than anyone else. And by the way, when you call, ask Eric about Grayson Allen. He says I'm vastly overplaying this whole love affair he has with Grayson Allen. 385-399-4186. 385-399-4186. Here is my thought on what I found when looking at rebounds, location on the floor. When a three-point shot goes up, the guy runs at the three-point shooter, close out, either you do the what Quinn calls the high school close out, you chop your feet, you get right into him, you put your hand, right, you put your hands on him, or you get down, you perfect the shot. Or you, a lot of teams do, Golden State, I know, is teaching this. I think Boston's teaching this. They really go for the block shot. And Boston's the best three-point shooting defense in the league, so we might all want to consider it. They're going for the block shot, and then they fly by. Now they're releasing. However, I think everyone's pretty used to that. By the way, Argentina now leads France 80-66, so France and Australia will play for the bronze medal. It's not where Joe and Rudy were hoping to see each other a few days ago. Too bad. Anyway, so, and there's a risk to that. If a three goes up from one of the sides, left or right, it doesn't actually matter. The rebound is two times more likely to come back to outside of the paint in the mid-range area on the side in which the shot went up than it is the weak side. So if you take a three from the left side, this includes left angle and left corner, 6% of the misses are rebounded in the mid-range, kind of toward the corner, and 5% of them are up high on that side. So 11% of misses. That's a much larger number than what we've talked about earlier, right? If you recall, when we did this earlier, and we talked about there were 6.4% of all misses were in that area. But if it's a three, you're in that angle left, you're all of a sudden up to 11% of your misses are on the side in which the shot went up. On the back side, so the weak side where the shot did not go up, you're actually at just 6.5% of your misses. You're right back to kind of where you're supposed to be. And you're double that on the side in which the shot went up. Other interesting note here, on a three, only 20% of the misses are right near the basket. 58% are in the paint, but pulled away from the basket a little bit. So you actually want to, you don't want to go to the rim for that rebound. What's interesting to me here, charting the 17,855 three-point misses from the left side of the floor, and the right side is similar, is that what we do in the NBA is the guy takes the three from that side and then releases out. The shooter's used to it. Everyone's kind of used to it. What I actually see this data, and then there's some flaws in this, I think that if you're defending on the weak side, so you've slid in, you've probably got a foot close to the paint, you're rotated over. If they skip past, you're going to get back out to your man. That three goes up. The weak side guy, I think, is the one that should be releasing. If you're trying to increase fast break possessions, now, there's some flaws here. One is that weak side guy is often the guy who comes in and checks on a Steven Adams or someone like that defensive, you know, and hits on him and, you know, checks him and helps on the defense, particularly if there's a rotation or, but on a catch and shoot three from that side of the floor, we'd have to figure out where, it's a thought. Let me rephrase a comment I made earlier. I wouldn't say I would do this. It's a thought that maybe the release should be coming from the weak side. Because what's interesting is if you look at right side threes versus left side threes, it's the same story. On the right side, if you take a three, about 10.3% of all misses come back into the mid-range on that side. And on the other side of the floor, you're down to the 6.5. And particularly if you're lifted at all, free throw line extended in the mid-range, you're only at 2.5% of all misses. So let's say by you end up losing, there's 22 three-point wing misses a night, or there's 22 shots. So there's 22 wing threes a night on either side. Teams shoot about 35% of them. So just kind of let's play some math here. Let's say there's 24 and there's 8. So there's 16 misses a night. And if there's 16 misses a night and you end up with, you know, a two and a half, maybe the number goes up a little bit because you're releasing once every other night. Maybe once a night at the worst, you're going to get burned on this. You're going to give up an extra offensive rebound because you did this. If they actually stick around to rebound, which we talked about earlier, that nobody's doing. Will you gain one or two possessions a night in transition, keeping you out of the 0-4 in the shot clock that you were, or increasing the highest percentage, or simply as getting down the floor faster, sprinting to the corner, taking a defender with you, you create an early 4-on-4 and an open floor opportunity you wouldn't have otherwise. I don't know the answers to these, but that's kind of one of the things I was most interested in, as I'm kind of always on the quest to figure out what the latest is that I can find out there that is some sort of money ball edge, and that's That's what I guess. That's the project. I don't know if it was worth anything. You can decide if that was worth anything. And you could decide if you were the what you would do. By the way, if you're looking for a great workout that keeps you engaged, Peloton is the immersive cardio experience with real-time features that will always keep you coming back. At $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike, get the cardio workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com. Use the promo code LOCK to get started. All right, that is the Friday show. I do not think we'll have a Monday and Tuesday show. I was hoping to reach Matt Harpering. We couldn't get together this week to tape it. I'm going to go to Moab and ride bikes before the season starts. So I'll be back with you Wednesday. And our guys will start trickling into town, and we're getting awfully close. So thank you very much. Appreciate the time today. This has been Locked On Jazz, part of a Locked On Podcast Network.